transformed. And this entire series was built on the idea that when people encounter God, when people say yes to Jesus and begin that faith journey of following Him, there are radical changes that take place in our lives. When we say yes to Jesus, it's not just minor things about us that begin to shift and change, but radical, life-transforming things change about us. In the first week, if you were here on Easter Sunday, we began by looking at one of the things I think is probably most important, is that when we put our faith in Jesus, is that we said we are taken from death and we are given life. In fact, if you were here, you may remember that one of the points that I passionately wanted you to understand was this, that the same power that infused the lifeless body of Jesus Christ and lifted Him up and resurrected Him from the dead is the same power that affects you and I today. It's the same power that raises us spiritually from death into life. It's the same power. And so if the power that had Jesus lifted Him up and gave Him life is available for us, it's a great power. It's a life-changing, life-giving power. It brings us back to life from the dead. The biggest problem with this whole transformation, though, is that most often, sometimes, before we trust Christ, before we begin that faith journey, our biggest issue is that we don't realize that we're dead. We can go through the motions of life. We can have a good job and a good family, and we can put our hand on our chest and go, yep, I feel my lungs going up and down. I'm still breathing, so I must be alive, right? No. Without Jesus, we are dead. But we don't have to be. And that's the most important thing. We don't have to be dead, because through Jesus, we can live. And even do more than live, we can experience true and abundant and meaningful life. We are transformed from death to life. Last week, Ryan talked about a transformation that God brings to us as well. The transformation that takes us from bondage or slavery to freedom. That we no longer have to be enslaved to our sin. We no longer have to be enslaved even to the religious regulations or the law of the Old Testament or that list of rules and regulations. That Christ actually came to transform us from bondage to freedom. Christ has set us free. But as if you were here last week, you remember Ryan talked about this amazing point that in the days of abolition, there were slaves that were actually freed. And they would go out on their own and they would try to survive and they would try to make it and they would have a hard time and they would struggle. And so what they would do is they would return to their masters, because slavery was all they knew. And if we are not careful, Jesus offers freedom, but because we're so experienced and we're so used to living with our life of sin, or we're so used to living under this bondage of religious regulation or law, that we say, you know what? It's just easier for me to go back and live there. And so we miss the freedom that Christ comes to bring us because we're just so unfamiliar. We go back to what we know and to what is comfortable. And yet Jesus wants much more for that. He wants us to truly experience freedom. And today we're going to wrap up this series on transformation with a subject that's very close to my heart. But I will say that I think from a transformation perspective, it's one that's often overlooked or goes unnoticed. And that's the transformation of adoption. When we come to Christ, we are no longer orphans. We are no longer counted His enemies. We are no longer slaves, and we're not even servants. Because when we come to Christ, we are adopted by God, and we become children of God. As I said, this is a topic very close to my heart, because in September of last year, we officially, legally adopted these three amazing kids into our family. And it has been a wonderful journey. It's not been without its struggles at times, but I will tell you, I wouldn't change anything. What some of you might not know is the story that got us here. In 2011, Carrie began talking to me about the possibility of us becoming foster parents. And to be honest, I really wasn't much interested. Life was okay. Life was good. We already had what many would call too many kids with three. And why would we need more, you know? So as a good husband, I ignored her as long as I could. I would tell her things that she would, tell her something that would at least push her off for a couple of weeks. I wouldn't have to talk to her about it all the time. But I told her, you know, eventually, like, I'm not too sure about this. I was never really passionately for it. And honestly, we just kind of moved on, and she kind of dropped it for a bit. But one morning while I was here in my office at the church, as I was reading and I was praying, I'll tell you, God spoke to me. And there are a few times in my life where I can say without a doubt that I've made decisions that I know absolutely for certain that God had spoken to me. Wasn't an audible voice, but it was certainly in my spirit a confirmation. And I know that it was God speaking to me as I would know that you were speaking to me. And that as I was sitting in my office, I was sitting on my couch that was in there, and I was reading and praying. Honestly, God spoke, and he just broke my heart. He said to me, Brent, I want you to do it. I want you and Carrie to be foster parents. And I was broken by this. I had put up the defenses, I had put up the walls, and I had basically said, I'm not interested. But God broke in and said, do it. I try not to be an emotional guy, but even alone in my office that morning, I can remember just sitting there in tears, knowing that I had had an encounter with God, and he had spoken to us about what we needed to do. And so I picked up my phone, and I just put a text into Carrie. She was working at Riverwoods Elementary at the time. And my text just basically said something like this, I'm in, let's be foster parents. Of course, she texted back and said, are you serious? I can't, you know, it went on and on. But so we signed up for the training. We did the training, and I will admit, I was a little more reluctant and obstinate about the training than she was. But as you go through the training, one of the questions they ask you during that time is they ask, what type of license do you want? Do you want to be just a foster parent? Do you want to be an adoptive parent? Or do you want your license to be both? Well, knowing that I was not willing to jump into any additional training after the 30 hours of training we had to go through, I said, does it cost any more? Because you know I'm kind of cheap. And I said, does it cost any more? And they said, no, it doesn't cost anything. And I said, is there any additional training? And they're like, no. In fact, you just basically check a box on the piece of paper. That's it. You want to foster, you want to adopt, you want to foster and adopt. And you just check that. The training you have is sufficient. And so as we thought through that and we prayed through that process, we said to ourselves, we asked ourselves, what if? What if we get a placement that's unable to return home? What if they've been with us a while and it just makes sense that we should adopt them? Shouldn't we have that available to us should we want it? So what we did is we checked the foster and adopt box. So in January of 2012 comes around. If you're here at Ashworth Road, you remember January of 2012 was a time of great transition for us as a church, but it was also a time of great transition for us as a family because we received our license on January 1, and then January 4, a Wednesday, Carrie gets the call to go and pick up two kids named Lizbeth and Bernardo. And that Wednesday evening after church, I still remember coming home. Carrie was there, and I brought our three kids in from church, and there were Lizbeth and Benny. And we were able to welcome them that evening into our family. Many times over that year, the Department of Human Services tried to reunify these kids with their mom, but because of poor choices in mom's life and addictions that she was just unable to overcome, they were not able to return home. Later that year, Jasmine came to live with us, and it became very clear to DHS that they knew, without a doubt, it was not a possibility for the kids to return home. And so they came to us, and they asked us that question. Are you willing to adopt these children? Are you willing to permanently welcome them into your home? We could have said no. We could have passed. We could have done something else. And they would have removed the kids and found them a forever family, and we could have just continued to foster. But we said yes, because these kids had been with us so long, they were already a part of our family. How could we say no? They were just ours already. And so we began the process of adoption. And in a moment, I don't think I'll ever forget, that honestly is as special to us as the dates of birthdays of our biological children. On September 8th of last year, Lizbeth, Benny, and Jasmine became legally and officially ours. Before that, they'd been a part of our family, but on this day, it was official, it was legal, and I have the papers in my office to prove it. Not only are they ours, but their names were changed. Now and forevermore, they would be part of our family as Lizbeth, Benny, and Jasmine Clark. Well, at least until those girls get married, right? Adoption. I wish I could tell you that 5 years ago or 10 years ago or when Carrie and I got married, we sat down and we had this great discussion about adopting kids. It really wasn't on the radar. In fact, to be perfectly honest, when Carrie and I started having children, I told her we'll either have two or four, because I was a middle child. I didn't want to have any middle children to suffer as I had just so tragically suffered in my life. And I said, we'll have two or four. But then we had number three, and I said, we're done. That's plenty. And so there was never a conversation that said, let's adopt. This is something we feel like we should do. Until 2011, and we were in the foster care program. When we think about adoption, some people are much more intentional than we were. But can I tell you that God was extremely intentional? In an often overlooked aspect of our salvation, God looks at us and he adopts us into his family. He adopts us as his kids. In Romans chapter 8, Ryan was here last week, and in that passage, it talks about how we are to live as Christians, things that have happened to us. Paul wants them and us to understand the changes that go on in our lives, and through faith, we believe and follow Jesus. He talks about what it's like to live life in the Spirit. And you, to be honest, if you look at Romans 8, our entire series of transformation could be pulled from there, because it talks about from death to life, from slave to free. And then today what it talks about is from servant to adoption. In Romans chapter 8, verses 14 is where Paul brings up this topic of adoption. Listen to what Paul writes. He says, for those who are led by the Spirit of God are the children of God. The Spirit you receive does not make you slaves so that you live in fear again. Rather, the Spirit you received brought about your adoption to sonship. And by him we cry, Abba, Father. The Spirit himself testifies with our spirit that we are God's children. And now if we are his children, then we are heirs, heirs of God and co-heirs with Christ, if indeed we share in his sufferings, in order that we may also share in his glory. I love that phrase, the Spirit brought about our adoption to sonship. I do want to give you a little background, because I think it's very interesting. What was going through Paul's mind when he said this? Because when we think of adoption today, we think of the story that I told, or we think about the couple that we know that'll travel overseas and go get an infant or a newborn even out of an orphanage overseas, and they bring them back to the family. But amazingly enough, adoption in the first century, what Paul probably had in mind was a little different than that. The legal act of adoption actually wasn't practiced even by the Jews. You may not know that. In fact, if you look at the five times Paul refers to adoption in his letters, it's always in churches or places that are bordering Rome, because it is a very Greco-Roman practice when Paul talks about adoption. You see, like today, adoption then was very deliberate, but it wasn't to grow a family. Only adult males were adopted then. An adult, not kids. And sorry, ladies, times were not in your favor back then, so you had no value at all, so you wouldn't be adopted at all. It was only a man. And simply because a man would be adopted, chosen by an adoptive father to perpetuate a family name, or to be someone that they could pass their inheritance down to. Their estate could be passed to this individual. You see, when someone was adopted, that individual was completely and totally equal to any of the natural born children, any of the biological kids, including access to the estate. It was a very important part of Roman society because it protected a family from dying off. It kept the lineage moving forward by doing such. And it provided that person being adopted privileges that they might not have ever had in their lives otherwise. As is today, adoption was a very legal act, a status, a change of relationship, a taking of somebody from one family into another family. In fact, there's a book called Slave Citizens and Sons by Francis Lyall, and he writes this. He says, the profound truth of Roman adoption was that the adoptee was taken out of his previous state and placed in a new relationship of son to his new father. All of his debts were instantly canceled. In effect, the adoptee started a new life as part of his new family. Adoption was truly very important to society, to culture. And so when Paul writes that we have been adopted, there's a process in his mind that he's wanting us to make sure we understand, a very deliberate, intentional process that God went through to make us his children. It's an important event, but it's also a very life-changing event because it completely changed the status of your family, no longer in this family, but in another family, no longer associated with a family that may not have been horrible, but maybe it was neglectful. Maybe you had ceased to exist already, but they brought you into this new family so that you could enjoy all the rights and privileges of being a part of this family. But you know what often happens is when we think about salvation, when we think about becoming in the family of God, that's an expression we use, but I don't know that we fully understand or believe exactly what that entails. Because a lot of times when we talk about salvation, when we think about what that means, there are many different thoughts that come to mind. There are many words that pastors love to use that we talk about with salvation. We'll talk about things like justification, where it's the legal act of being declared righteous by God, that our sin is no longer counted against us, that our debt is wiped clean, the sin that is gone, it's just immediately, legally lifted away from us, and we are granted the righteousness of Christ. We are justified. Our sin is no longer counted against us. We think about salvation that way. We think about salvation in terms of redemption, that there was a price that had to be paid for our sin, and Jesus Christ himself was willing to pay the ransom, the price that was necessary for us to be saved. And we understand that we were bought with a price, and that price was the life of Jesus Christ. And we also think about one of my favorite words. I know you guys use this every day, propitiation. Just flows off the tongue, doesn't it? And you think, I use that with my friends all the time. We never think of that word, but we might think about what it means in regards to salvation. We think about our sin. It merited the wrath of God. It had earned the wrath of God. It earned death. It earned separation from God in hell. But because of the work of Christ on the cross, the wrath of God was satisfied in him and was no longer put on us. Our sin was dealt with once and for all. And the work of Christ brought us into God's favor. A lot of times when we think about salvation, we do think about the negative. What's been taken off us. My sins are taken away. And we might even realize that, yeah, we're no longer slaves to sin. But we often don't move much further. Maybe not slave, but okay, now I'm a servant. Very little discrepancy there, but in our minds we think, okay, I'm not a slave to sin, but I'll be a servant of God. And we leave ourselves in that category. And most of the metaphors that we have dealing with salvation talk about what happens for us. The justification, the redemption, propitiation. But when we repent and put our faith in Jesus, we don't just have things removed from us, even though, to be honest, that would have been sufficient and amazing. But because of God and his incredible love for us, we have something amazing that God puts upon us. And that, as Paul described it in this passage, is sonship, adoption. And adoption is what happens to us, something that we get to experience even now. You see, if all we think that Christ came to do for us was to save us, then I think we miss one of the most amazing and important aspects of what Christ came to do. Jesus didn't just come to redeem, he came to adopt. Not just to rescue, but to embrace. Not to make us his slaves, but to make us his child. Think about that. That expression is on, that phrase is on the screen. Look at that. Let that soak in your mind just a little bit. Jesus didn't come just to redeem, he came to adopt. Not only to rescue, but to embrace. Not to make us his slaves, but to make us his child. Isn't that amazing? J.I. Packer, in his book, Knowing God, writes this. He says, adoption is the highest privilege that the gospel offers. Higher than even justification. Justification is the primary blessing because it meets our primary spiritual need. But adoption is higher because of the richer relationship with God that it involves. You see, adoption is so amazing because God didn't have to do it. There's nothing that ever compelled God that said, I have to make you my children. He could have justified. He could have said, okay, the biggest problem you have is sin. I will take care of your sin problem. But he didn't. He went an extra step. He could have looked at us and said, okay, listen, because of the death of my son on the cross, I'm going to save you. But you're going to have to pay for that. So you will be my servants from now on. Honestly, still not a bad deal for us, right? I mean, when you think about sin earned death and hell and separation from God, to be God's servant, to be in his presence, to spend eternity with him, even as his servants, wouldn't be a bad gig. But he didn't do that. He didn't even end there, which would have been sufficient. He went an amazing step further, and that step is adoption. And when you think about adoption, is there really any greater honor than for someone to look at you and to say to you, I want you to be a part of my family? Is there any greater honor than for someone to say to you, I love you so much, I care about you so much, so deeply, that I want us to have the closest possible relationship that we can have. I want us to be family. And God didn't have to do that. He wanted to do that. One of the quotes I read this week from John Stott said, from the beginning of creation, God did not put this plan in motion just to save us, but it was to adopt us as his children. And that is what God says to us. I want you to be my child. And when we respond in faith to him, when we believe in Jesus Christ, he looks at us, he looks at you, and he says, welcome to the family. When we've been adopted by God, that's an incredible change in our relationship and how we can relate to him. No long, not a servant of him, not yes, master, what do I need to do, but as a son, as a daughter. It's a big change in relationship, but it doesn't end there. There are other privileges that adoption brings to us. One privilege is this, as we read, it says, brought about your adoption to sonship. And I want you to notice how Paul uses that word. You know, in our modern society, we like to make things more gender neutral. And we might be tempted to change that expression to say, oh, Paul, you should have said your adoption to sons and daughters. But I want you to think about the implications when Paul says the word, you are made sons. As we've already said, if you were a woman back in the first century, life was not favorable for you, you property. Okay? And so what Paul is saying here is that if you trust in Jesus, if you believe, then you are elevated to a position of sonship, regardless whether you're male or female. You see, we wouldn't want Paul to say, hey, the great things that happen to you if you're adopted by God is you become a daughter. That was nothing. But he looks at men and women alike and he says, if you trust Christ in faith, if you follow Christ, then we all get changed into this position of sonship. Doesn't matter if you're a man or a woman, you are in that status with God. That's amazing. Here is a place where we don't want Paul to be gender neutral because of the society and culture he lived in. We wanted him, everybody, to understand how elevated we are because of this sonship that we've been given. We are all elevated to that status of sons with the same rights and benefits to all of us because we are considered. That status of sonship has been given to us. And because we have the same status as a son would have, we are put on the same level in inheritance with Jesus Christ, the Son of God. Think about that. Not only are we sons, but we have been put on a same level with Jesus. The same glory that Jesus receives, we too will receive. The same honor that is His now and is to come will be ours. God looks and He says, you need to understand, you're not stepchildren. You're not sub-children. You're not anything less. I will treat you just like my son, natural, biological son. That's what adoption means. And everything that I'm giving to him, I'm offering to you. And in the same way the Father will exalt Christ, we will also be exalted. And you know what? That ought to excite us. Even though it should be much less, even though we don't deserve it, even though I think most of us would go, keep us down a notch, God says, you're my child. Paul writes it. He says, heirs of God and co-heirs with Christ. Isn't that amazing? We need to really understand what Paul is saying here. Co-heirs with Christ. That's a relationship that I don't think we live in very often. I think we prefer to be servants, and God says, there are no servants here. There are children. My sons and daughters, elevated all to the status of sonship. That's what there is in the kingdom. And as His full children, we can relate to God on the same level, on the same way that Jesus related to God. We get to cry out to Him, as Paul writes here. We cry to Him, Abba, Father. You realize when Paul uses this, this is the same expression that Jesus Himself used when He cried out in the Garden of Gethsemane. Just hours before His arrest and crucifixion, we are told in the Gospels that Jesus prayed, Abba, Father, if it be possible, let this cup pass from me. Abba. It's a term a child would learn from birth and how to call their fathers. It was a term of endearment, but also a term of respect. It was a term of love. And it implies or it means an intimacy between the two people that use that term. An intimacy that Jesus knew, that we can also know, so that we can look to our God, our Father, and we also can cry out to Him, Abba, Papa, Dad. That's an intimate relationship. And our translation today really doesn't do this justice because it says, and by Him we cry, Abba, Father. That's a little tame for the actual word that's used there. Cry out would be better, thinking of passion and feeling. And who wouldn't cry out when we truly begin to understand exactly what God has done for us by adopting us into His family as His sons and daughters. And we are now the children of God. How can we not just look up to Him and say, Abba, Papa, crying out to Him, understanding the relationship that He is drawing us into? There's one other thing we get with adoption as well. And that's the proof or the assurance of adoption. Paul tells us that we've been given His Spirit, the Spirit of God living within us. That's an assurance that nothing will ever change our status as God's kids. Nothing will change that. Nothing can change it because honestly, there's nothing that we did to earn it. You see, many times when we think about adoption, we think in the movie like Annie, where adoptive families come into an orphanage, and so the kids know they're coming, so what do? They take a bath, they comb their hair, they put their hair right, they put on their best clothes. They want to impress the adoptive family so that the family comes in and says, I'll choose you. But when we understand adoption as God adopts, we know that there was nothing that we did to earn it. We couldn't clean ourselves up enough. We couldn't put on the right clothes well enough for God to adopt us. It's not by our good deeds that God adopts us. It's what Christ did on the cross that leads to our adoption. And we've been given the Spirit of God so that we know without a doubt, I am God's kid, and nothing will ever change that. Knowing that we've been adopted, knowing that we have been given the most intimate relationship possible with God, should change how we live. It should change how we live, how we interact, how we just go about our daily lives. Matthew Becker recently shared with me a sheet. There are two columns. On one side it says the heart of an orphan, and on the other side it says the heart of a son. And it goes down and it talks and it compares and contrasts how these two different people live. Those as orphans, those as sons. Let me just share a few with you today that I thought were meaningful. You see, orphans see God as a master, but sons see God as a father. Orphans believe they can only depend on themselves, but sons realize there is a dependence upon God and they trust Him. Orphans are insecure. They're constantly seeking approval and praise of men and therefore trying to impress God with their actions. But sons know they are secure through the Spirit of God and are accepted by God, and any service done for Him is simply from an overflow of love for the Father. Orphans always wonder, have I done enough? Or if I do one more thing, will God love me more? And children know they didn't do anything to merit adoption, and there is nothing they can do to make God love them more. Orphans feel like a servant or slave, but sons know they are children of God. In his book, Knowing Christ, Alistair McGrath writes this. He says, quote, adoption is about being wanted. We can stop right there with that quote as far as I'm concerned. Adoption is about being wanted. And when we are saved, God looks at us and he says, you're not my servant. You're not my slave. You're not even just a project. You are my child. And I've adopted you for one reason only, because I want you. I want you. That quote does go on to say, it is about belonging. These are deeply emotive themes which resonate with the cares and concerns of many in our increasingly fractured society. To be adopted is to be invited into a loving and caring environment. It's about being welcomed and wanted and invited. Adoption celebrates the privilege of invitation in which the outsider is welcomed into the fold of faith and love. And that is what God is saying to us today. That is what God is saying to any who will follow Him. He says, you are wanted. You are loved. You are a part of my family. You see, adoption is not a societal idea. It's not a government construct. It's a family idea rooted in love. Adoption is often overlooked. We miss it. In fact, I don't know that I've ever heard a sermon preached on adoption. Not this way. Maybe that we should adopt kids, but not to say that God has adopted us. It's often overlooked. But can you see why it's so important that we grasp and understand this transformation that's offered? We shouldn't overlook it. Can you know and now understand why knowing about this, knowing that you have been transformed from orphans and slaves and servants to sons and daughters of God is so critical? understanding that God did it not because he had to, but because he wanted to. You see, God's ultimate desire for you is an intimate and personal relationship. And you know, he says, you know what I'll do to get it? I'm going to adopt you. The greatest, highest honor and privilege possible. The question we have to answer is, how will we respond? How do you view yourself in relation to God? Do you see yourself as a son or a daughter of the king? Or do you see yourself as a servant, always looking to please the master, always looking to do more, always looking to avoid the wrath of the one you serve? I'm here to tell you today that God looks at you and he says, you're not my servant. You're my kid. And I love you. He wants that intimacy. And he showed us and he proved it to us by adopting us into his family. How will you respond? I think we have to process that because it will shape everything else about our Christian life. In fact, J.I. Packer in that same book, Knowing God, says this. He says, quote, our understanding of Christianity cannot be better than our grasp of adoption. It's a pretty bold statement, but I think we do need to give some thought to it. Are you living as a servant or as a child? Ask yourself that today and this week. Write that question down. Put it on your mirror. Put it on your desk. Or just write the statement down. I'm a child of the King. Look at it. Remind yourself. And when you struggle and when you don't feel like a child, ask yourself, why not? What's keeping me from experiencing that adoption, that love, that intimacy with God? I think it's very important that we live as John wrote in his first letter in 1 John 3:1, where he said, see what great love the Father has lavished on us, that we should be called children of God. And that is what we are.